looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Needham Bank, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Jordan's Furniture, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Man, a 1-2. Left center field, on the move, Jackie Bradley. Lunging, diving, oh, he made the play, and he slams into the wall. A sliding stab, but a great, great catch by Jackie Bradley. At the crack of the bat, it looked like there was no way on earth he was going to run that down, but he did.
No, and look at Evaldi, the pitcher. I mean, he's standing there just clapping. Welcome to the Red Sox when you got Jackie Bradley in center field. Like, that catch right there is one of the best I've ever seen.
He's getting a standing ovation here. Goodness gracious. And paid the price.
Wee! Oh, did you see that catch of Jackie made? Oh, wee! Red Sox beat the Minnesota Twins yesterday at Fenway Park. 3-0 was the final. They take 3 of 4 from the Twins. Remain on this ridiculous pace that they have been on all regular season. Now with 74 victories in 107 games, it's a winning percentage of .692. I keep waiting for them to slow down. I just think that's not, you know, they're not going to end with 112. They'll end up with, I don't know, 104, something like that. And maybe when they get to September, they'll have such a big lead, they'll put the brakes on, blah, 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 blah. But meanwhile, they're still on a 112 win pace. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Reporters. But I want to start with that catch by Jackie Bradley Jr. in left center field yesterday. 2-0 Red Sox at the time, top of the third inning. He runs into the gap, and look, it was a hell of a catch. Some of the Jackie Bradley catches, I think, are overrated. This one was not. It was a fabulous catch. Tim McCone, by the way, is alongside filling in for Jim Murray, who co-hosted today on Felger and Maz as Mike was out. So, McCone, what did you think of that Bradley catch yesterday?
I thought that catch was unbelievable. And a lot of it was more, and we talked about this a little bit on Felger and Maz, but I thought it was him actually running into the wall and kind of not really having regard for the wall actually being there, too. They kind of put that over the top.
Okay, so you know what? You and I haven't had a lot of chances to work together, at least on this show. So let me ask you, Tim, where are you on Jackie Bradley generally? Do you think Bradley's an asset, a liability? What do you think he is?
I think right now you probably ride this out for as long as you can, because I'm not sure from an asset perspective how much he really is worth. So if you can get him on a hot streak like he is right now in terms of at the plate, I think their best bet is to kind of ride that out as long as you possibly can and then kind of use him as a defensive outfielder moving forward if he goes cold.
Okay, so right now I think Bradley's average is what, like 210 or something of the, like 214. He's up to 214. At 214, Tim, is Jackie Bradley worth it?
No.
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 Okay, good. Smart man. Smart man. Jimmy, I like him more every second. So look, here's what I would tell you. I know everybody wants to get excited about this catch that Jackie Bradley made. And let me tell you that it doesn't change my opinion of him as a player. And whenever he makes a play like the one he made yesterday, and he might make, I don't know, a half dozen a year, and I'm talking like 5-star plays. Mm-hmm. Okay, there are a lot of good ones that a lot of guys would make. But the really, really great ones, like the one that he ran into the center field wall on Memorial Day and caught the ball over his shoulder. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
Those, you might get 5 or 6 a year, 1 a month. And then even then, the impact on the game is debatable. But the at-bats, well, he's getting 3 or 4 of those a night. 4 in most cases, because as we know, they don't pitch it for him. Because remember, at the beginning of the series on Thursday night, this happened.
Full count, 3-2. And he struck him out to end at 97 miles an hour. Jackie Bradley fans, they leave them loaded in the 9th inning. Minnesota eking out a 2-1 victory.
So now it cracks me up because then 3 days later, Bradley makes a good catch and everyone says, well, see? Well, just because it came more recently, that makes it more important than the strikeout with the bases loaded on Thursday night because it happened 3 days later. So you can just throw it back in someone's face. That's what makes it more valuable. Because I can give you a lot more Jackie Bradley at bats in which he didn't produce than I can game-saving or game-altering catches. Like, to me, that's a no-brainer. You got to get to a representative level with the bat to make the defense worth it. And Bradley's not there. Okay, so that's number one. If you feel differently, by all means, 617-779-0985. Number two, and this is no small thing. I want to get to some of the other games from the weekend, but also, trading deadline now, less than 22 hours away. At this time tomorrow, the non-waiver trading deadline will have come and gone. And you are hearing now a lot of different things coming out of the Red Sox or out of Fenway Park about, well, they might still have the chance to add a player in August. Certain guys are going to clear. There will be contracts to take on. First of all, I haven't seen the Red Sox take on a contract yet. Not since the season started. I still think they want to end up, if they do go over the $237 million threshold, which, as Jimmy Stewart, our producer, pointed out, Evan Drellick of NBC Sports Boston points out that they are already going to be over it. Okay? If that's the case, then the Red Sox shouldn't have any reluctance whatsoever about adding more money at this stage. Like, if they go $10 million over, it'll actually cost them $16. But even then, it's not as if it's going to cost them 60, okay? So I'm not saying they need to be reckless, but the bigger penalty for eclipsing this most recent threshold is that they will drop 10 spots in the draft. And there was a story last week by Alex Speer indicating that the Red Sox were prepared to do it. So they should be willing to take on money, but Nathan Eovaldi, who pitched yesterday, and we'll get to him in a bit, $2 million in salary this year. Of which the Red Sox are responsible for only about, oh, I don't know, $700,000 of it, not even. So that's a small expenditure. And there was a report today indicating that the Red Sox were interested in Bud Norris, reliever with the St. Louis Cardinals. I had the story here a second ago and I lost it. But Norris this season, I think, is making $3 million, which means that the Red Sox at this stage would be responsible for about $1 million of that. Okay, so you're talking about two pitchers that you can add for under $2 million bucks, which, again, great, no problem. But I also believe that the quality of pitcher you get is oftentimes directly related to his salary. So you're not going after big fish, is the point. And some big fish have moved. Brad Hand has gone to the Indians. The Nationals added Kelvin Herrera early on in the process, and there are rumors now that Herrera is now available from the Nationals. So I'd love to see the Red Sox go get him. Jimmy Stewart may remember this. You know, McCone, I don't think you were here that night. But I said way back when that if I had one pick of all the relievers out there, I'd take Kelvin Herrera. He was my number one.
I can vouch for this, Tony.
Okay, that goes way back earlier in the year. Then once he was gone, I wanted them to get a younger closer. But I would love to see them get Herrera. Zach Britton obviously ended up with the Yankees. The Indians also acquired Brad Hand. So now Roberto Osuna has gone to the Astros from the Blue Jays, as McCone has told you about today. All these relievers have moved. The Red Sox have added Nathan Eovaldi. And they tried to tell us that they wanted him over Zach Britton, which I don't believe for a second. Nonetheless, Dave Dombrowski does have about 22 hours still, a little less, until the deadline tomorrow. And I have to believe the Red Sox will make a move. I can't imagine that they're going to go in with the relief corps they have because, remember, two of those games against the Twins last week, they blew leads. They came back to win one of them on Friday night, but in two of those games, they blew leads. So I see a number of you lined up already. We'll get to all of your calls on the Red Sox, I promise. 617-779-0985. And when we come back, I do want to touch on yesterday's game, the performance of two players in particular that stuck out to me, and that's independent of Jackie Bradley, and my opinion on one of them in particular may surprise you. I'll explain when we come back.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Maserata, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Tell you what, we'll take a couple of quick calls here, and then I want to get to Two observations from yesterday's game. Two players that caught my attention. Mike's in Connecticut. Mike, go.
Hey, Maz. Is Brazier still on the 25-man roster?
I believe he is. Yep.
Okay, so my only question is, why are they sending down Workman? I feel like since Brazier was pitching in Japan or something last year, and he's like a lightning in a bottle kind of guy to me. But Workman, since he came back from that Tommy John, I feel like he's been a solid guy, like a good long relief, even a seventh inning guy. I just want to get your take on why you think they sent him back instead of Brazier.
Yeah, so Mike, look, this comes down to contract flexibility. And so Brazier's 30 years old, I think. I still want to call him Brazier. I like that better. But Brazier... they didn't have the contractual flexibility with him, I don't think. In the case of Workman, he was out of options. I'm sorry. Workman had options. I think Brazier's out, meaning they can send Workman to the minors without exposing him to waivers. So I don't want to get too complicated, but Workman's going to be back. Okay, he's going to be back. Jeff is in Wilmington. Go ahead, Jeff.
Tony, you're driving me crazy about Jackie Bradley. I love the guy.
Okay. And?
If he's on offense, he can go 4-for-5, and the team can still lose 5-0. If he's in the field, and it's 3-3 in the ninth, and there's a gap shot that he catches, he could save a game with one catch.
Okay, well, yesterday he made a great catch that really didn't affect the – I don't think affected the final outcome at all. So how come you only present that scenario in a way that the defense helps?
Because you said that he only makes 5 great catches a year, whereas he's up all the time.
Right.
But on offense, you have a whole team on offense, and they're all working together to put runs on the board.
So that's
in the
true.
Field,
so that's
sometimes
true.
Sometimes it's just him, and it's just his responsibility to save a game with a fantastic catch.
Okay.
You need a guy like that on the roster.
So, Jeff, let me ask you a question. When the Red Sox won the World Series in 04, who was the center fielder? Johnny Damon. He's not that good. How about 07 and 013 was Jacoby Ellsbury? How would you rate him as a defensive outfielder?
He was great until his arm got destroyed.
Yeah, I wouldn't call either one of those guys great ever. I would say average at best as a center fielder. Average, in fact, I might even say a little below average. I just don't think the defense at that position is all that great. Now, look, all that important is what I should say. Now, Bradley? Bradley's a fabulous defensive outfielder. Does it make up for the fact that he hits 210? No, it doesn't. It doesn't. A catcher? Maybe. A shortstop? Maybe. A center fielder? Uh-uh. No way. Jeff's in the car. Jeff, go.
Hey, Tony, real quick. I am old enough to remember that Don Zimmer in 78 put his foot to the pedal so hard that he ground that team to dust by the time the end of the season rolled around. I was just wondering if you're getting that same feeling from this team and the pace they're on. If they can keep this up the entire year, or whether going this hard might burn them out come September, October.
Okay, so Jeff, I don't feel that way. I think overall Alex Cora has done a pretty good job of giving guys rest here and there. In fact, he did it early in the season, I think, to a fault. But when you really weigh it out, all things considered, you know, it's hard to pick a Cora with how he's managed it. So the Red Sox have played what? They've played 107 games so far, and J.D. Martinez and Ben Attendee have played the most on a team with 100. The guys that would concern me in terms of games played are Mookie Betts, who's at 87, but he spent time on the DL, so maybe he got a little break in there. Xander Bogaerts, who historically has faded in the second half, he's at 87, and right now he's sitting at 279 with an OPS of 864. So Bogaerts hasn't begun the great fade yet, if that's what's going to happen. I'd say overall, I feel okay with how Cora has managed the roster. I don't have major concerns about them being run into the ground. And look, one of the faults that Zimmer had in 78, if you want to go back that far, and it was 40 years ago, they didn't have much of a bench on that team. This team has a little bit of a better bench. I'm not saying it's great, but Cora's used them. And look, they put Blake Swihart at third base yesterday. And I thought Swihart did a pretty good job, given that it was first career game at the position. Talk about a guy they've yanked around and moved all over the place. Swihart's one of them, which brings me to the two players who stuck out to me in yesterday's game. One was the guy on the mound and what the manager said about him after the game, and that was Nathan Eovaldi.
And true to the scouting report, he hasn't walked anybody. And that's in there. Strike 3 throws him 1-2-3 again for Nathan Eovaldi. He has had himself a day. Just 82 pitches through his seven.
He was very good. Good mix of pitches, cutters, four-seamers, the breaking ball. His last outing against them, I think it was a bad one. 8 runs in 2 innings, and he left a lot of pitches down the middle of the strike zone. Not tonight, not today. He was very efficient.
Okay, and look, I thought he was absolutely terrific in this game. So I like to get this on the record, McCone, because I always get accused of saying things that I didn't say or doing things I didn't do.
Yeah.
And because people only like to hear what they want to hear. So when it comes to Eovaldi, I never said I didn't want Nathan Eovaldi. When the Red Sox made the trade, Jalen Beeks for Eovaldi, but I said, hey, no problem. You're not giving anything up. Sure, take a shot with a guy who throws 96. No issue there. I don't know what he'll be over the long term or if he helps him, but give it a shot. My criticism was Dave Dombrowski spinning it to suggest that somehow the Red Sox ended up with a better player for their team than Zach Britton would have been.
Right.
That to me is just a manipulation of the facts. But if you want to tell me that they made a good deal in getting Eovaldi, fine. No problem. Totally agree. Because you gave up squat to get him. And I think Eovaldi overall is a relatively average pitcher. And I think over the long term that will play itself out. So I believe that the only time you ever really get to know a player is by watching him repeatedly over a long period of time. So he had a good game yesterday against the Minnesota Twins. What does that mean? I don't know. However, that cut fastball that he threw yesterday, and I have my eye up on the MLB Network now, and they're calling it a slider, but it's really more of a cutter. But given the amount that it moves, man, if that's what that pitch is on a regular basis, he's going to be brutal to hit against. And so yesterday, that pitch was really, really good. I don't know if he can do it with regularity. I don't know if this is a one-time thing. You know, all the people who cover baseball tell you, oh, the cutter, oh, it's a new thing. You need to watch him. We don't know yet.
Well, to your point, too, with this trade, obviously, you're getting someone that can at least impact this team this season. You look at Jalen Beeks, the time he had in Boston, and then this weekend, getting absolutely shelled. That guy wasn't going to make an impact on this team this season.
Well, and the other thing is, I'm not sure he was going to make an impact ever.
Yeah.
I just didn't see good stuff there. When he came up here and pitched, I thought, oof, this guy looks ordinary. Talk about as ordinary can be. Ricky's in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Ricky.
Tony, you got to give me a minute because I got a question for you, and then I got a stat based on that. So let's be real here. Who's better in the field, Bryce Harper or our boy Jackie Bradley Jr.?
Oh, Jackie Bradley Jr. is probably one of the, 10 best outfielders in the game.
Thank you. Okay, going back to 2016, which is obviously not that long ago, just 2 years ago, Jackie Bradley, in 150-some-odd games, hit 26 home runs with a .267 average. Bryce Harper, in that same year, hit 24 home runs with a .243 average. Again, 26, .267, 24, .243 for Bryce. One guy is about to make $40 million a year, and one guy's on the trading block for half of the city's trading block. I just want to know what you're always shitting on the guy. I'm sorry. Oops.
Yeah, well, Jimmy, I don't know if you caught that, please. Yeah, so Ricky, look, we'll let you go. It's all right. I understand your point. And so here's what I would tell you. Jackie Bradley's got to hit at a representative level to have some value. He's got to hit at a representative level. Now, you want to tell me Bryce Harper's overpaid? Fine. But would you really rather have Jackie Bradley than Bryce Harper? Let's not be stupid. If you could play Mookie Betts in center and Bryce Harper in right, money aside, you wouldn't do that? I mean, let's not be ridiculous. You'd rather have Harper than Bradley. So now I just think that everybody, see this again to me goes down to whatever happened most recently is what's in your mind. So Bradley made a hell of a catch yesterday and everybody wants to get all excited about it. Just like they did back years ago when Jacoby Ellsbury stole home plate. Yeah, man, look at Ellsbury. How do you generate that kind of offense? Have you talked about him since he went to New York? Because he is one of the worst contracts in baseball. So what I'm telling you is don't get all geeked up about the highlight. It's not about the highlight. It was a great play. But in the regular season, the 162, Bradley's a bigger negative than he is a positive. Unless he hits somewhere around .250 with 20 homers. Then it balances out and you gain something out of it. So the last month, yeah, he's been better. Fine. Congratulations. He's still hitting .214 for the season and has been one of the 10 worst offensive players in the American League. So I don't get too geeked up about one catch or one catch a month that separates him defensively from other outfielders. If you're going to separate yourself defensively, you got to hit well enough to be average at your position, and he does not. There was another player yesterday in addition to Eovaldi that, to me, opened some eyes. I want to get to him after McCone gets you caught up on headlines.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Mazz, 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is the Baseball Reporter's.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Mazzarotti, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
That is going to be scooped up, made the play down to second, one on to first, and a double play.
How about Swihart?
Blake Swihart looking like he's been there before.
Yeah, absolutely. That ball was hit hard, and he's able to cover the ground, get down on it, knock it down, get that ball quickly to second base. That's not an easy play at all for Swihart. And two turned over very nicely by Nunez. Look at that hop. It comes right up to his stomach. Fortunately, he's able to grab it with that right hand and get rid of it quickly.
And he actually did look a bit like a catcher.
Yeah, blocking a ball in the dirt.
So look, when it comes to talk radio, Blake Swihart's not exactly a guy that moves the needle, okay? But if you've ever listened to this show or you listen to Felger and Mazz, you know that I like Swihart. I've always liked Swihart. We have former first-round draft pick. It was a shortstop. The Red Sox converted him to catcher or caught some, and he was a catcher in the minor leagues for a period of time. And then, honestly, I think the Red Sox did the kid a disservice and screwed him up. They yanked him all over the place. Left field, he hurt himself. They move him back to catcher. He got hurt again. Now they got him moving all over the diamond. But you know what? As long as the kid gets at bats, I'm fine with it. Yesterday, first career start at third base. And you heard it there. He started a double play. He also made a half-decent play in the first inning where he looked reasonably comfortable moving on a ball. But in this one here, he did. He looked like a goalie. Just absolutely blocking the ball, caught it in his chest, made a good throw to Eduardo Nunez at second base, who then made the pivot and turned the double play. So, Swihart also had a couple of hits in the game, and this is kind of a funny way to say it, given the number I'm going to give you, but he's up to .233, which isn't a big number, but he was down in the 150s, even the 140s, I think, at one point, and he's still 20 points higher than Jackie Bradley, albeit in much fewer at-bats. So I wouldn't mind seeing the Red Sox give Swihart a little more time at third base. Let's see what it looks like. He's not playing tonight. Nunez is over there, Holtz at second. But with the way Rafael Devers' year has gone, he's been a big disappointment. Really one of the more disappointing players on the team, if you think about it. So Tim McCone's alongside because Murray co-hosted on Felger and Mazz today. So McCone, let me ask you a quick question. 1 through 15, right, the 15 teams in the American League. In terms of offense at third base based on OPS, 8 is exactly average. Okay, from 1 to 15, 8 is exactly in the middle. Where do you think the Red Sox rank in OPS at third base?
I think it's probably like, I would say like right around there. So probably 8 or 9.
Okay, they're 10th.
Okay.
They're 10th. So they're below average offensively is the point based on OPS. Okay, based on OPS. Defensively, 1 through 15, where do you think they are?
Probably dead last.
They are dead last. Yeah. They are 15th. Good job. I mean, and look, Devers has got 20 errors, I think it is. They have 21 as a team at the position. So the point is this. You've got very little to lose at third base. And I don't think they're going to make a trade for a third baseman. Okay, Moustakas has been dealt. I suppose there are other guys out there. But nonetheless, I think the Red Sox have greater needs. They'll patch it together at third base. If Swihart can play, I'd keep doing it. I mean, how good does he have to be defensively to be better than Devers? Just make the routine plays. Don't screw them up. And then hit.
He does have 20 errors on the season, by the way. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. And I think they have 21 as a team at the position, so he's made 20 of them. But Eovaldi yesterday I thought was really, really good. I was impressed by that cut fastball. That's a legit pitch, and if he has that with any sort of regularity, he's going to be a big asset for the Red Sox. That'll be a really good trade. And I would look to re-sign him if that's what you get because he could help you. And then beyond that, Swihart yesterday. Swihart's hitting 9 in a row. He's up to .233. Like I never wanted them to deal Swihart, though I'll be surprised if he's still here tomorrow. Steve is in a car. Steve, what do you got?
Hey, how's it going, Tony? Glad to see it didn't take us very long to start getting stupid about Jackie Bradley Jr. That was really, I thought it would take longer. That was quick. if you truly believe that you would take Jackie Bradley Jr. over Bryce Harper, I would prefer you get your brain checked and you not be in a public forum. And this is what you talk about, where you say, well, think about the most recent thing that happened. Do you want to know what happened right after Jackie Bradley made that incredible catch in center field, which is a microcosm of his entire career?
Yep, he came up the next half inning, led off, and struck out looking.
And he struck out. And it was like, as soon as that happened, and I was at the ballpark yesterday for the game, everyone in the stands looked at each other and went, well, that's his career in a nutshell, isn't it? Great play in center field, and then he comes up and he gets blown away by a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. Like, that's Jackie. There you go. So I think they're in kind of a tough spot because, as you guys have talked about before, with the metrics talking about how great of an outfielder J.D. Martinez is, but I have two eyeballs in my head. He's not that good. You can't put him in right field. You can't put him in left field, really. So you're kind of stuck. Who else are you going to really be able to put in the outfield? One of the guys suggested, or the call screener said, oh, why don't you put Swihart out there? And we just talked about why you can't really do that.
Okay, so Steve, I'll just tell you quickly. I'm going to let you go because I want to get to some other people. See, I think Martinez can play left at Fenway Park. Most every ballpark has a small field and a big field and left or right. To me, Martinez can play the small field, especially at Fenway. I mean, remember, Manny played left field. Greenwell played left field. Those guys sucked. They were horrible outfielders. Terrible outfielders. And so, well, yeah, they throw out guys at second base. Anybody can throw out guys at second base in Fenway. You're only about 70 feet from second base, for crying out loud. It's an easy throw. So, and playing the wall is a piece of cake. If it's over your head, you turn around and back up three steps. That's all. Piece of cake. Ben's in a car. Ben, what do you got?
Hey, Tony. So I will also keep Jackie Bradley in the realm of reality. Instead of comparing him to Bryce Harper, I'm curious, who would you rather have playing center field? A guy like Bradley, or would you prefer Kevin Pillar from Toronto?
Well, Pillar's not a great offensive player either, Ben. So
both defense-first guys, but I think they're pretty comparable. I was looking at the numbers earlier. Pillar's hitting close to .250, but his on-base sucks. And Bradley's on-base, granted, not great either, only around .300, but for what his average is, his on-base is far better than Pillar. So in my mind, that makes them pretty comparable in terms of guys. So I think what it all boils down to is I'm looking for a reason. Jackie Bradley's obviously having a down year. We've seen him go through these hot stretches before. I think on balance, he's a little bit better than what he's going to end up at this year, where his numbers will be. And I think he's trying to be more of an on-base, you know, patient time kind of hitter, because early in his career, he would expand the strike zone too much. And I think he's just kind of working through some things right now. I think going into next year and even beyond, I think it's fair to expect a little bit better from him. For this year, obviously, it's going to be a down year, though.
Ben, I got to cut you off. You're just going on too long. So look, with regard
Jones to... Jones would rather have Pillar, by the way.
Okay, so I will tell you that, honestly, I don't want either one. I'd rather have a guy who hits a little bit more. And I don't have Pillar's numbers in front of me, so maybe they would surprise me, but I don't want either one. And look, with Bradley, I just don't hold your breath on him all of a sudden turning into some sort of better offensive player. You know, you say he's getting more patience in the strike zone, and that at bat where he struck out on Thursday night with the bases loaded, he took the first five pitches. And then he swung at the sixth, which was out of the zone, and struck out to end the game. So I'm not a huge Bradley guy. Again, here's my gripe. Okay, and I'm not one of these analysts who goes purely by the numbers and the end result. But don't get sucked in by the highlight that happens once a month. And I felt the same way about Ellsbury, and I hate to go back to him. But I'm still hearing from people about how he stole home plate against Andy Pettitte. Because he did it once. And the highlight, you know, made your blood rush. He wasn't that good. He was overrated. In New York, they would dump his ass in a second. He's been such a bust there. Quickly, Mike is in Spencer. Mike, what do you got?
Hey, Tony. I was at that game yesterday and saw Uvalde pitch, and he was pretty efficient. Talking about bigger needs, our bullpen relief pitcher. What about if he's doing the same thing through the rest of the season, putting him out there for that relief help, kind of mixing up the way Francona did with Cleveland in the playoffs a couple years ago.
So, Mike, look, I think that's a real possibility. I think Eovaldi could end up in the bullpen. I think it could be any one of a number of guys. And so, obviously, come the postseason, the Red Sox are going to have four starters. So, depending on health, assuming Eduardo Rodriguez is back by then, and apparently he's making a little bit of progress, but I think it's going to be a while before you see him. Obviously, Sale's in there. I think Porcello's in there. I mean, I think those two are locks. Then after that, a lot of people would tell you Price is a lock. I don't think he is. I think if Price pitches, you know, is a mediocre starter here for the balance of the season, meaning he doesn't distinguish himself from Eduardo Rodriguez or Eovaldi, I could see a scenario in which Price ends up in the bullpen. He was lights out there last October. And if I would rather have Price air it out for two innings than give me five innings of mediocre bullcrap or worse, which his postseason history suggests that he would. So, you know, Price, Eovaldi, some sort of power arm out there that could strike people out. Yes. Pomeranz, I think Pomeranz is useless in both places. Like, I've heard people say, put Pomeranz in the bullpen. They tried that 2 years ago in 2016, and he gave up a home run to Coco Crisp that knocked him out of the playoffs. Do you remember that? And he was throwing harder then. Now he's throwing like 90 tops. I think Pomeranz, I'd leave off the playoff roster entirely. I've never been a Pomeranz guy. I know he had a good year last year, but really, I think he's borderline useless. Joe's in Lincoln. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, Tony. First of all, I'm Jackie Bradley doesn't infuriate me like everybody else because he shows he can hit on occasion. But here's the question I have. I've always wondered in baseball, there's great offensive statistics. It's hard to really judge, you know, what an important role defense plays. If you ask the pitcher, which would they would rather have, a terrific defender or an offensive player, what do you think they would say?
Well, it depends on the position.
Well, let's say just say center field.
Okay, I would tell you that a pitcher would probably lean towards defense.
Yeah, and because what happens is defense relaxes the pitcher, and a relaxed pitcher pitches better. So I think in a way, you know, and offense is fluky. I mean, you can hit the ball hard right at somebody. So defense is consistent. So I don't think it's just that he makes spectacular plays, Tony. It's just he's a great defender. And Joe, all, you know, and
Joe, do you think run support relaxes a pitcher?
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Run support is fluky. Like they can, the other pitcher might be terrific that day, and good pitching is going to be good hitting, and a guy can hit the ball really well right at somebody. He could hit a bloop. So, but defense you can rely on.
Yes,
I think you know. Go ahead.
No, Joe. Listen, it's a fair point. And when you say defense is consistent, his defense is. It's consistently good. What I would tell you though is that you could find an outfielder who's consistently good defensively. Bradley's great. He's a great outfielder. He makes great plays that other guys can't make. Okay, and what I'm saying, though, is how many of those really are there per year? The rest of the plays that are good plays, a lot of guys will make. Johnny Damon was a perfectly fine center fielder. He was never a Gold Glove winner. I don't think. I mean, you could double-check that maybe for me, McCone. Check Ellsbury, too. I'd be willing to bet neither one of those guys ever won a Gold Glove. In fact, I'd be willing to bet neither one was ever a finalist. They were average at best, but they were better players than this guy.
2011, Ellsbury won a Gold Glove.
2011 he did?
Yep.
Wow, that must have been a bad crop of center fielders because he wasn't that good.
Of course, he was also second in the MVP voting.
Oh, that's... it was a year he had the 30 home runs, right? Sorry. I got to steal that little gimmick from the...
2011, it was Nick Markakis and Gordon, I believe the Royals, Gordon was the other Gold Glove winner.
Oh, all right. Alex Gordon, the left fielder, and Markakis won it.
Of course, he was once a third baseman. In fact, drafted by the Royals as a third baseman, left-handed hitter.
I'm just telling you, I'd be willing to bet. Ellsbury was not a good center fielder. Trust me on that.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.